The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
From the crossroads of Merrick Road and Sunrise Highway in beautiful Merrick, New York, Long Island, this is Sports Talk New York, WGBB 95.9, 1240 AM. I'm your host, Mike Wadone, joined as always by my co-host, the man we call Cappy, Chris Caputo. Got a great hour for you tonight. We're going to be talking lots and lots of sticks, as in lacrosse here on Long Island. Have a great national story that we're going to go over Limestone University, bringing their coach on, Brendan Storier. And then we're going to talk a little local lacrosse with Gordon Purdy, who's the head coach out at Adelphi University. Then we'll talk a little Mets and Knicks to get it finished up tonight. But before we do any of that, welcome, Cappy. How you doing tonight?
All right, Mike. Glad we are back in.
Oh, we threw a little curveball. There we go. Yep.
Sorry, Mike.
That's okay.
Glad to be back in studio. Brian Gray's on the other side of the glass, going to get us through this hour. So it should be a fun hour. Talk. You know, lacrosse is a little bit different, but Mike, We did this last year with a baseball team that was in the NCAA tournament. So I kind of like these feel stories and how people bounce back. We'll see how it goes. But, the Knicks being able to make it to the second round gives us something to talk about. Mets going up and down recently, but at 22-12, you can't be too upset. And, Yankees have the best player on the planet as far as I'm concerned.
Well, he's certainly showing that at this point. We're waiting for Mr. Soto to get moving here. But, for any other mere mortal, you would take what he's giving you at the moment. But, of course, it's a little different. But as Cappy mentioned, feel good. Well, it's a, I don't know if it's a feel good story or it evokes a lot of feelings. We're talking tonight about Limestone University, which is down in South Carolina. Now, why we have them on their coach, two reasons. Number one, they do play in Division II, and they're going to play some local teams here, most likely in the playoffs, Delphi, Pace, Malloy, perhaps. But Limestone University just found out about 3 weeks ago, I guess? Three, 4 weeks ago, Cap?
Not even. I think just over a week ago.
The school is closing. And here they are. They're in the NCAA tournament. As you mentioned, we talked a little baseball last year with that on the Division III level, and how these teams, kind of prepare for this, and everything else. So it's a pretty wild story when you put in the time and effort and, these colleges have been around. Unfortunately, it seems to be kind of the norm now. So many small independent schools, colleges are closing.
Yeah. And you look around and it's just, it's hard for people to meet the standards of that. And then, you got kids trying to go to colleges. I know I have a bunch of kids that I teach, and the cost of college education is through the roof. So when they're trying to find something local, hopefully it makes more sense. Kids want to go to Buffalo or, one of the SUNY schools. I think it's a little more affordable, but it's just hard to find that. And Mike, with the NILs and people, trying to get more money at the Division I level, I think it waters down some of the D2 and the D3 chances.
Yeah, because when you talk about college athletics, we can talk about the NCAA tournament, Division I basketball and football, but that's a whole other animal. Probably even baseball to some extent. I know about cost. My daughter Maggie's graduating in 2 weeks from Salve Regina University, which has a very, very solid Division III baseball program up there. The costs are just nuts and out of control. But this story about Limestone University is really, I'm very, very curious to talk to coach and see how it goes. And without any further ado, we'd like to bring on Coach Brendan Storier from Limestone University, head coach men's lacrosse. Coach, this is Mike and Chris up here in New York. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. We gave the audience just a little bit of a teaser about what's going on at Limestone and your program, but obviously we're interested for two reasons. Number one, it's an amazing story of what you're going through right now with your program and your players and what you have to face in the closing of your university, and you're here you are in the NCAA tournament. And also here on Long Island, we have such a strong lacrosse base. We're pretty familiar with the Division II programs here. So, first of all, welcome to the program. And secondly, what's your mindset at the moment as you prepare for the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think we're trying to keep that as normal as possible. We've been fortunate to get invited to these pretty consistently throughout the last 25 years. You know, it's certainly an honor. Our team earned it. And so we're excited for that. And, you know, we're trying not to look forward, right? We're trying to not look ahead. We play a really tough North Greenville team. It's an in-state team. They're right down the road from us. They're well coached. They play really hard. They win face-offs. So we're trying to take it one game at a time. Really just putting our best foot forward against them. And then if we get a chance to be together for, you know, another 4 or 5 days, and whoever, you know, is next up is going to be the biggest game of our life.
Coach, this is Chris here. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about the mindset, because it's kind of it's kind of new. It's not like they told you in March, "Hey, coach, you know, this was something where they said we want to try to come up with $6 million." People tried to come up with $2 million, and the board of ed and the trustees already said, you know, no good. This was basically April 29th, for all intents and purposes, a week ago. What is the mindset as you're obviously at that point trying to prepare for a conference tournament, then NCAA tournament? How do you balance the NCAA tournament, yourself, where you might be next year, and then also your freshmen, sophomores, and juniors? How do you balance those three things?
So when this news first came out, you know, I wasn't shocked, and I told that to the parents when I sent that my first email. But I was surprised. You know, I was taken, off guard. I didn't think it was something that was being talked about happening. I didn't think it would happen, you know. But you know, when you're in this line of work, and you're at a small school, and you know, every March they talk to you about your budget, and that happens. That's happening all over the country to small schools. So you know, anything's possible. So when I spoke to the guys, you know, we say, hey, hop in the transfer portal, and we're going to help you every way that we can. You're going to be okay. You're at a really prestigious program. People are going to want you on their teams, and there's also a lot of schools out there that need students. You know, and again, right, you're at a very good lacrosse program. You know, we hope that they're well coached and that they'll certainly be successful at their next place. So that was the first thing, just to make sure that the guys were okay, that they knew that we were going to help them, and it wasn't, hey, don't do this, don't do that, you know, wait. You know, I didn't want them to wait. You know, I had hopes, and I had, you know, I was optimistic that people would figure it out, but I didn't want my hopes to interfere with their future. So that was something that we started to kind of get to right away. And the only thing I asked them is, hey, when we're in the locker room and we're on the field, it's got to be all limestone. Our seniors deserve that. The program deserves that. And, you know, our guys are second to none when it comes to, you know, being classy, you know, young men. And they're doing a great job trying to, you know, stay on task.
Coach, the announcement almost went viral, or pretty much did go viral, in terms of, you know, the video of the gathering in the gym and everything. It was a heartbreaker. You know, I'm a basketball coach along with Chris, and I coached at two Division II schools, Dowling and LIU Southampton, that have closed up here over the last couple of years. So I can't imagine what it's like for you. I have a little bit of a feeling. But that first practice, when you got back together and after the news broke, was it more of like a – how did you feel your team was? Were they rallying together? Were they still kind of in shock, or was it business as usual?
They were rallying together. I mean, we had a game a couple of days after that against Wingate, coincidentally, their coach was the head coach of Dowling when they shut down.
That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, Coach Boyle, I'm sure you guys know of him or know him. So he's been through it, and, you know, he reached out right away just to see how, you know, I was doing, and to just kind of offer his support in that regard. And his team was wonderful after we played them. They weren't so wonderful the next time we played them, because they beat us in overtime.
Saw that.
It was great. You know, their team prayed with us after the game, and, you know, they didn't have to do that. So the support that we've gotten, you know, certainly from schools in our conference, you know, the LRs of the world, the Newberries, those coaches, you know, also reached out. And then, you know, friends that I have, as well. So, but Yeah, I mean, we try to keep it business as usual regardless of what's going on. But the guys rallied. You know, I said, hey, what do we want to do? How do we want to, you know, approach this? Because we didn't know, you know. I mean, we thought that, hey, we'll be able to finish our season, but you don't know. You know, we're fortunate that we can continue as long as we, you know, as long as we're able to. So we're fortunate in that regard. But, I mean, the guys are great. You know, they're very close. They know when they come to Limestone that you're playing to make the NCAA tournament and, you know, see what you're able to do. So
we're talking with Brendan Sturrier, the head coach at Limestone in South Carolina. They'll be the number two seed in the South. Coach, you do get a home game. Graduation was yesterday for the seniors. What's it like to basically be playing a home game at a school that no longer exists? What do you think that's going to be like on Wednesday?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be great. I know we have a great support staff. People are still on the books.
Good.
You know, to make sure that we're
thank
we're getting
hopefully
what
you
we
are
need. You know, one thing Limestone has always been able to do is put on a great NCAA event. You know, whether it's for men's lacrosse, women's lacrosse, soccer, we've, you know, hosted basketball, NCAA events here in the past as well. And, so we're so fortunate to have support. And that's, you know, that's what has always made Limestone so special. You know, is the support we have and the excitement, that is around, our athletic programs.
And what happens if you guys win? Is the second game at the highest remaining seed, or is there a spot for that?
Yeah. So if we're fortunate enough to win on Wednesday, we'll host the next round at Limestone
on Sunday. Okay. Well, let's keep it going.
Yeah. We got to win on Wednesday, that's for sure.
Now, Coach, you played at Limestone, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, yep. Myself and everyone on staff did.
That's fantastic. So obviously, you have such a great connection to the school. You know, and we could go on for that, you know, with that for a long time. My question is just kind of getting away from the school issue more towards your team. Can you tell us just a little bit about your team? And, you know, you went 15-2. There are some New York guys, as we noticed on your roster, which I'm sure is no surprise. Just tell us a little bit about your team and you know, what your scouting report is on you guys.
Ooh, I don't want to give that up. I know it's pretty well. It's a team that works really hard. We play hard. We try to play fast. We try to be disciplined as much as possible. But when you play fast, sometimes your discipline goes out the window at times. But again, like I said, it's just a hardworking group of guys. You know, we have guys from all over the place. Like you said, New York. You know, one of our assistants, Kevin Reisman, who grew up playing on Long Island at West Bab. He was 2-time National Player of the Year as a face-off guy at Limestone. So, you know, I always let him go to Long Island. So I'd eat too much pizza and bagels if I went. So, and then, you know, we have Kendall Collins. He's from Kingston, New York. He was an All-American defenseman for us. I'm from Lafayette, New York, which is right up near Syracuse.
Yes.
So we have guys from, you know, all over New York, but also Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Maryland, all the way down the East Coast into Florida and you know, even the West, and then certainly Canada. So it's a group of guys made up from all over the place, and, you know, they find themselves in Gaffney, South Carolina, and just try to be a part of a special program and do something extraordinary.
Coach, at what point do you allow yourself to think about what's next for you? Because you have to make a living and your family needs to. So at what point do you kind of think about where you go next and, you know, kind of take that into consideration?
Yeah, I think about it every time my wife asks me.
Don't we all?
Yeah. No, she's great. My family is so supportive and they love it as much as I do, so it makes it easy. I have people out there. I don't have an agent or anything like that, but right. I have people that are looking out for me and, you know, making calls and, seeing what the best course of action is. You know, and hopefully I'm someone that, you know, another school would, want to be their lacrosse coach. I care a lot about my guys. I, you know, try to make them better men when it all, you know, comes down to it. And fortunately, we get to do that through the sport of lacrosse, because that's, you know, special, and it's been a part of my life forever, really. So I think about it, but I try to keep it on the back burner as much as possible. Again, like, you know, I don't talk about it, around the guys or anything like that, because I expect them not to. So how can I kind of break that?
Yeah, I mean, you're in an incredibly unique situation where, I mean, it's just all heck is breaking loose, and you're trying to keep a team together and yourself and prepare. And we give you all the credit in the world. We thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes tonight, Coach. We wish you all the best. You obviously run a very quality program. I'm sure you'll land on your feet, but we're rooting for you.
I appreciate it. I want to thank you guys for having us on. Anytime I can talk about Limestone Lacrosse is a good time. It's a special program. It's a special place, and there's so many special people that have been involved in the program for the last 35 years.
Well, it certainly is.
Well, keep the run going as long as you can. And
Got to win on Wednesday.
Yeah.
one at a time. All right, Coach.
Yeah,
good luck.
Your time.
All the best.
Yes. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. That was Coach Brendan Storier from Limestone University of the Limestone Saints. We're going to get a little different perspective here in just a second of a former Saint lacrosse player. But, Cap, that's tough, man. I give him all the credit in the world, because when you, just like we said, I mean, all those things you're juggling, plus you're trying to get a team, you're competitive, you're trying to get your team into the tournament. He does. You know, it's either going to be the greatest rallying cry ever, or – you know, what a great story if they can.
Yeah, either way, the ending's going to be tough.
Yes.
Let's just put about it that way. But pretty interesting how he said he reached out to a guy who happened to be at Dowling when Dowling closed.
Yes.
To give him a little bit of an idea of, hey, how do you deal with this,
yeah,
knowing that the school's going to close? So,
yeah,
but he is keeping his players in there and trying to get them in the portal, which is the right thing to do. But anyway, let's continue on and talk about a little more local.
Absolutely. We're gonna head on the parkway just up a little north, and we're going to bring in Coach Gordon Purdy, who is the head coach at Adelphi University. Men's lacrosse has been there for quite some time. Coach Purdy, welcome to the program. Mike and Chris here on WGBB.
Mike, Chris, thanks for the invite to be on the call tonight.
Oh, absolutely. Now, Coach, you probably don't remember this, but you and I met many, many years ago. I was actually the athletic director at the little school Holy Child in Old Westbury.
Yep.
And
I know where that is.
Yeah, and we as you at Waldorf, we came across each other a couple of times, but I'm going to throw it over to here to Chris for a minute, because in the lore of our discussions, you are famous really for one specific thing besides being the Adelphi coach. So, Chris, you tell him.
Anytime I hear your voice, Coach, all I can hear is New York Saints lacrosse, be there.
Sounds like Peter, who used to call out some games, I think. Yeah.
Well, that
love those times in the Coliseum.
Oh.
Will always be fond memories of finishing those games and having, you know, so many fans there, and we were drawing great crowds, and my teammates were wonderful. Oh, man, lacrosse was, it brought me so much joy.
That had to be an amazing experience, because, you know, unfortunately now the Coliseum is kind of falling on some hard times. Not a lot of attendance in there, although they are starting back with some arena football. But, yeah, lacrosse, I mean, it's always so huge here on Long Island. But the Saints, they were booming back then. And the excitement, as you mentioned, must have just been tremendous.
They were. And, you know, surprisingly, you know, once a month, once every 3 months, somebody will come up and say, hey, I used to watch you play at the Coliseum. And, you know, I hear those stories, and, you know, I just left. I love that place.
Yeah.
Loved it. The fans were great. The teammates were great. Yeah, those are fun memories back then of getting to play the game in an indoor setting during the winter. It was fantastic.
We're talking with Gordon Purdy, head coach at Adelphi University. Adelphi is the reigning national champs at the Division II level. Bracket came out today. Adelphi with a first-round matchup at home against Georgian Court this week, and, you know, possibly playing either Pace or Malloy in a second round if they are to advance. Coach, talk a little bit about this year. You know, you had one setback at St. Anselm's and went back up there this weekend and after giving up a goal with 2 seconds to go and not winning the faceoff, still wind up getting a save and then a goal to win in overtime. Talk about the excitement of that game and kind of what your team's about this year.
Yeah, so I think coming off a win last year and, you know, having played at Adelphi back in the 80s, it's been a long road to win a championship, and certainly that championship, being there back in 2011, it was a tricky way to lose by a goal. But, you know, coming off that win, there was some hesitation. You know, we lost four of our top six scorers, some key defenders, and, you know, we weren't sure where we were at. But these guys have rallied, and rallied they have. They're, you know, some of the leading scorers now in the country, and, you know, our offense is clicking, our defense is great. We've got the returning player of the year with us again, Dylan Renner, who's in the net and playing like a superstar. So we're really, we're really cautious about the upcoming games, but, you know, we're really pumped that we get the opportunity to play again.
Coach, looking over your roster here, you mentioned a couple of people, you know, and your goalkeeper, who is just fantastic. You know, obviously you're very, very Long Island heavy in terms of your roster. When you're recruiting, I would assume, you know, with your program being as excellent as it is and how you've built it, in some ways it almost kind of recruits itself. But being that you're an international guy, do you look outside well, I wouldn't even say New York, but around the globe, do people contact you outside of the United States?
We do, yeah. So the answer is yes. Recruiting, there's so many different things that go into recruiting. I think Adelphi is such a great institution, and it's sent out so many teachers here in Nassau and Suffolk that really – you know, I've got so many connections with so many coaches, and those coaches reach out to me when they've got somebody special. And so every player has, you know, some connection to somebody I seem to know at some point.
Sure.
You know, we did pick up, a Canadian, Reese Bauer, who actually, you know, you spoke of it, found a way to throw the ball to Mikey Dernan, who scored for us. But, you know, those players that come from afar, they're a little tricky. You know, we really know what we've got when we recruit here in Nassau and Suffolk, because those guys have been tested and, you know, the coaches that are sending them to us sort of know what we're looking for. Well, some may say, oh, look, you're looking for a D2 school. Well, we don't really look to recruit D2 players. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, we're looking to go with those D1 players that don't get noticed by D1 big-time coaches, and sure. I think we've got quite a few of those on our team.
Coach, the bracket this year has got some teams, you know, a little different, 16-team bracket this year, so everybody kind of gets a home game, and then from there you might get another one. Can you talk a little bit about the state of Division II lacrosse at this point? I know Malloy, this is the first time that they'll be making it. They're close to you guys. One of your assistants used to kind of build the program. Joe Catalani built the program at Malloy. Can you talk a little bit about, Division II, where it's at for lacrosse and even more so in the area?
Sure. So Division II, you know, if you look at it, and we've sort of been Division II back in the 70s, and then we went to Division I in the 80s, early 90s, and now we're back at D2. So we've sort of seen that quite a bit of change with Division II. I have some notes from Kevin Sheehan, who's actually on our staff right now and helping us, who was my coach back in the 80s, who wrote a letter to the NCAA saying, hey, let's team up and put these Division II games with the Division I games, which, you know, ended up happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, right now, we've been out to California 3 times. We're down in Florida traveling. We're trying to grow the game, and with that bracket expanding to 8 from the north and 8 to the south, we get a chance to have 4 at large. Those are all key roles in hoping, you know, teams that have never made the playoffs have that extra opportunity. You know, historically, Adelphi Division II has had the lowest chance of making a NCAA postseason game and of all the sports, and that hasn't really been fair. So to right now see 16 teams battle it out for a champion, I think is awesome. And to see teams like Georgia Court, who's never made it from lacrosse, and you know, as you said, Joe Catt started that program, put his life and blood into Malloy, and you know, for us to have a chance to possibly play them, that's going to be, you know, somewhat challenging, but certainly we'll be ready. I can tell you that if we get to play Malloy.
Coach Gordon Purdy, Adelphi University men's lacrosse, joins us. And Coach, you talked about trying to grow the game here, you know, in the Northeast. It's always been, especially in the New York area, heading south to Florida as well. Where else in the country would you think that lacrosse could be the next real hotbed? Out west, the Midwest? I mean, is it kind of just evolving, or, you know, because, you know, obviously the game, you know, in down south has busted out as well.
Yeah, so I remember when they said, hey, we're going to take it down south, and, you know, Tampa's going to have a team, and, you know, Lynn's going to have a team with being down there. You know, I don't know how many times I've been down to Florida, but we're always, you know, got connections down in Florida that, you know, they're looking for us to come down and play, and I'm sure we'll probably end up there next year as well. Where's the next one? I mean, I'm sure Texas is going to be an upcoming, you know, Denver. I've got friends out there that are telling me how great their lacrosse is. I mean, I think the question is, if you look at the landscape of where lacrosse was 20, 30 years ago, you know, and I was around, it's scary to say then, and to where it is now, I mean, it's unbelievable growth. And, you know, I think the bigger question is, where won't it grow?
Yeah.
You know, where will lacrosse not grow? So, you know, I keep seeing schools that are opening programs and opportunities for kids to play, and I think it's fantastic. You know, I do know, and I've watched, you know, the demise of Dowling and as you spoke of now, Limestone, and, you know, unfortunately we picked up a great player, Noah Gibson from St. Rose, and, you know, that's a terrible thing that's going on. It's part of what's happening around the country. That's a real tricky spot for many kids, but right now, you know, there's so much opportunity for players to go play somewhere with, you know, 300 plus Division III schools, 70 plus Division I and II schools. It's an awesome opportunity if you want your kid to go to school and to get to play a sport. Lacrosse is a great opportunity.
Coach, as far as lacrosse goes, has the transfer portal affected teams like Adelphi yet with kids trying to go play Division I, or you think they're just happy playing for Adelphi and playing for you and wanted to win another national championship?
So we, you know, the joke in our staff is we never lose any kids. You know, we, the joke is once you come to Adelphi, no one ever wants to leave.
Okay.
Cause we've got a real family and it seems that way. That said, historically, if you want to go back 10, 15 years before the portal, there was so many kids that just seemed to be unhappy at Division I schools, going off and finding it wasn't all they wanted to. And we recruited those kids to Adelphi through their high school coaches.
Right.
You know, now you've got the club teams out there, so it's a bigger, you know, I think Adelphi is probably being hurt by the portal, because you enter the portal, you're going to have, you know, 200 coaches reach out to you. You know, it's no longer, you know, I'm connected to the 80 or so coaches around Long Island that have these kids coming back home to these high schools. It's now out there and it's public. So while it might be great for kids to now get new opportunities, I think that for us, you know, the portal hasn't really helped Adelphi, so to speak.
Okay. So now that you're a veteran of this, what is the secret now for the next, let's say, week and a half to get yourself to the finals against the South? You know, you got to play a game Wednesday, and if you win, you play the weekend, and then if you win that, you play the weekend after that. What do you think is the job of the coach to get the team ready to win three games in a week and a half.
Yeah, so, and we spoke about that with the boys tonight. We had our meeting. We watched the event, you know, in the selection show, and we felt the joy of our accomplishment. You know, while we're get to be number one, right now, any team that loses, it's over. And we stress the importance of now, you know, winning every practice that we go out to, taking one play at a time, and doing as well as you can in that play, and taking advantage of the opportunity you have. And we really feel blessed to be able to do that. We've got players and veterans that have been there and have gone through this before and understand how important it is to be as ready as you can. While you may only have a, you know, roster size of 34, I think we can play at the NCAA level now that we're competing. We really do understand that it takes all 50 of us to compete and practice to prepare us so that come Wednesday, you know, we put our best foot out in front of Georgia court.
Could you play
and
them?
That's all we're looking at right now.
That's
we
why
are
you have
not looking past Georgia court.
And that's why you have assistant coaches to be able to look forward, not for the kids. The kids are focusing on one game, right?
Yes. Yeah, listen, my coaches, you know, and I've got a bunch of them, but Coach Cat, Coach Volpe, you know, who are veterans, that, you know, both of them have been Coach of the Year in the last 2 years, have done an outstanding job. You know, we were up at, St. A's, and both of these guys are just veterans at knowing exactly what the finger of the pulse of our team is. And, you know, I'm blessed to have two guys that just are able to step up and lead both sides of the ball. You know, Cat used to be a defensive coach, you know, and he used to be a head coach for 17 years at Malloy. So, you know, he and I have sort of, you know, worked together now for some 17 years, which is crazy. And I think we both understand what it takes. You know, it was a joy to coach with him last year and Coach Folt, and to watch and see us win last year was, you know, a dream come true for both of us, and we want that dream for this team now.
So in early February, you played Georgian court. You took care of them relatively easy, 19-6. Scouting them and coming into this first game, what do you think about their improvement throughout the year, and what's your main goal as a game plan for them?
Yeah, I mean, I hope they're not listening, but they probably are.
I promise we will not simulcast this down to New Jersey. I promise.
Yeah, Mickey, listen, he's a great coach. We've played him a few years in a row right now. And, you know, he sort of knows our talent. We know his talent. You know, I'm on a text with him to congratulate him for winning, you know, and being an automatic bid, which is just awesome for him. You know, he showed what it means to improve, and he has done that. So, listen, that's a much improved team from when we played them. And so I've spoken to Coach Cat, and I've spoken to Coach Volpe. Those guys won't get much sleep tonight. They're putting their game plan together. They're going to be doing what they need to do. So tomorrow when we hit the practice field, we're going to know exactly what our roles are as players. And it's not really going to be too much different. We're going to know, you know, we might switch matchups a little bit from when we were out there. You know, I happen to be watching a bit of lacrosse today and, you know, watching some of the things we did well and what we need to improve on when we play them again. You know, but it's a real blessing to have a team of players that I have that are so willing to sacrifice any part of their game for the greater good of the team. And I mean that. You know, sometimes we need to put a shot clock in because we don't want to shoot, and we're giving up shots. Some of the goals we scored against St. A's were, you know, assisted goals that we love. And you know, if there was any thing we need to work on is having our players take a shot before, you know, before the shot clock runs out, because they really want to share the ball. And defensively, you know, with Renner in the cage as our true leader, it's just awesome to watch, you know, him and Volpe architect a defense to, you know, to do as well as they did against Georgia court the first time, and we're going to try to do that again.
Well, we hope to be able to be talking to you again as back-to-back national championships. I don't want to put the, you know, guard in front of anybody, but at this point, we're going to, you know, keep an eye out for you guys. And really, Coach, we appreciate your time and wish you guys the best of luck moving forward.
It's my pleasure, but I truly thanks for the invite tonight. And, yeah, we'll see how we go. Well, Wednesday at Adelphi, probably looking at 4. We have that NCAA call tomorrow morning to find out and confirm that, but probably our NCAA game is at Adelphi. For all those fans that may want to come out and see a game Wednesday night, Wednesday evening, afternoon, whatever time it ends up being, we hope to see you out there.
And eventually get yourselves to Foxborough. That's the goal.
Yes, we would love to get back. has been the goal since we came back January 17th. Is our first day back, and that's what we've been working for, one practice at a time.
Fantastic. Coach Gordon Purdy, again, we thank you very much. Wish you all the best, and we'll definitely be watching.
My pleasure. Thanks again, guys.
All right, take care. That was
you too. Bye.
Absolutely. Gordon Purdy, Adelphi University men's lacrosse coach, getting ready to try to defend their national title on the Division II level. We're going to take a quick timeout here, and on the other side, talk a little baseball, a little basketball here on Long Island's WGBB Sports Talk New York.
You're listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Long Island's WGBB Sports Talk New York, 95.9, 1240 AM. The number here is 516-623-1240. Again, that's 516-623-1240. If you'd like to call in, talk a little lacrosse that we just went over, or if you'd like to talk some Mets, Yankees, Knicks, we have, unfortunately, hockey. We're not going to get to hockey, much to our friend John Santamaria, much to his chagrin, although we'll hear a little bit from Johnny in the coming weeks about the Jets draft, and we'll be honing in a little bit more football, but... Cap, as you mentioned, we have the Knicks and the Mets, really, especially, you know, for us, two big fans of those programs, especially the Mets. So Mets dropped a doubleheader today. They got rained out yesterday, dropped two very close games, obviously one-run games to the Cardinals. You know, anything to be concerned about at this moment?
I think the thing that is frustrating is that most, if not, you know, 90% of the Mets' losses this year have been by one or two runs.
Yeah.
They're not getting blown out.
No.
You know, they're just not having games where they lose 11-0. But when you're right there and you blow it and you had three static games that that they blew in the past, I'd say 12 days, that's not good. So I felt like they could have won some games that they didn't and could have had a better record than whatever they are, 22-13 at this point. I felt like they could be at this point, you know, maybe like a 25-10, which would put them at the best record in baseball. But you can't really be upset. You still stay a couple of games ahead of the Phillies. The pitching staff is okay. Obviously, every lefty on the Mets is now hurt. You know, there's no more bullpen guys that can throw. We even, the guy we signed that's a lefty is still hurt, Brooks Raley. So I think that's the problem, is maybe their bullpen arms are just getting, they're so tired.
Yeah.
These guys are being thrown out there every day, and it's just a matter of, you know, they call up Daniel Nunez, so maybe he's ready, but it's just trying to fill so many guys in, and I think part of that is the Kodai Senga. We can't pitch him every 5 days.
Right.
And now you're looking for either a day off or who's going to be the spot starter. And now we bring up, you know, this lefty that pitches, and then we bring up, you know, today they start another guy. And I just think they're dipping a little too much, and I just hope that the injuries don't overwhelm them.
Yeah, we wish they could play every game at Citi Field. I mean, they're 13-3 at home. You know, 9-10 on the road. I just have this in front of me. You know, the last 10, Mets 4-6, Phillies 6-4, Nationals 5-5, Braves 5-5, which is, you know, the Braves got off to a horrific start.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're going to be able to dig out of that though.
But Mike, people say the Mets have only played, I think, six teams over 500 at this point out of all their games, six games, whatever.
Yeah.
But they're also putting teams under 500 right. by beating them, you know? You got to play who's in front of you, but I think this is a big stretch where you're going to have to play, you know, some decent teams. So they're going to go to play Arizona. Next week the Cubs come in. In 2 weeks the Dodgers come in. You get some of those games that are going to test the Mets and see how good they really are. But I think they're okay, and I think they're going to hold on to that first place for a little bit. And then from there it's, you know, are you going to win those key matchups? Eventually the Yankees, and, you know, we'll see where they stand. I really think that they are one of the top clubs. I think Soto's starting to get hot. He's hitting the ball, whether it's going over the wall or deep. He seems like he's having a little more fun. It looked like he was blasé when it was cold and wearing a hood. But I think he's okay, and you know, it's nice to see Alvarez back.
Yes.
And Mike, let's be honest. Pete Alonso is explosive right now.
He's been over
two strike hitter, putting the ball the opposite field. Yes. His approach is different. Hitting 350, 31 RBIs or more, and you know, you can't be happier. And I just think that you know, you could sit there and look at the losses and say it's a tough day or a tough week, but for the most part, this team has exceeded expectations.
Yeah, and by going 13-3 at home, they've been able to, you know, drop a few here or there. And like I agree with you, I think no panic right now whatsoever. But just to keep an eye out, injuries, you know, it's like anything. But I'm very happy for Pete as well, because you could see he really had the weight of the world on his shoulders for a while. Had an amazing playoff last year, storybook. Great to have him back. You know, looking forward, I hope that this doesn't drag out again, you know, that they find a way to meet in the middle and keep him, because he should be a New York Met. And with, you know, with Soto in front of him, I've seen a lot of guys on base. You know, there's nowhere to put him a lot of times. He comes up bases loaded. He's been tremendous in the field as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, a happy Pete is a happy Mets.
Yeah. And I think, you know, defensively, if you're going to say there's some spots of needing help, it's Vientos at third. Just cannot throw the ball on the run. Put Pete in a bad spot today. I think the outfield is okay. I love watching Tyrone Taylor. I can't get enough of it. Trying to watch Jeff McNeil in the outfield is tough, but I think the Mets are going to do what they have to do to, you know, Marte left the game today. They got Jose Azokar out there. I mean, they're going to do whatever they have to do to keep people as healthy as possible, and that's give rest. But I'm really happy with their starting pitching. I think they've just done a great job keeping them in ball games. They just got to go a little bit deeper, which I think at some point they will get six innings out of most of these guys. But I think it's been good. I think it's been nice to see. And honestly, they have to be happy with their attendance. The people at home, they've been showing up. The attendance has been through the roof. And with nice weather, should be even better.
Definitely. Last thing I wanted to ask you about the Mets. Jeff McNeil, I know we talked a couple of weeks ago about when he was going to come back and how he was going to fit in the lineup and different things. You see him staying with the team the rest of the year? You think he's trade bait?
I don't think so. I just think that there's so many injuries that he's such a utility player. He can play anywhere. So if an outfielder goes down, he could play the outfield. If an infielder goes down, he could play the infield. And I just think if he starts to not hit, and he goes down to, like, that 200 range, who's going to want him?
Right.
And if he gets to, like, 350, are the Mets willing to get rid of someone for what? What are they going to trade him for? Another starting pitcher? They're going to trade him for, I mean, are they going to go out there and try and get themselves Nolan Arenado and, you know, when the Cardinals fall apart, maybe Ryan Helsley, their closer? Okay, I'll throw him in that package.
Yeah.
But they're not looking for a guy who signed a five-year, $40 million contract. If they're trying to get rid of Arenado and Helsley, who are they trying to get? They're trying to get, you know, Drew Gilbert. They're trying to get Brandon Sproat. They're trying to get the Mets prospects. They're not trying to get some guy who loves to play golf and is a veteran.
No, that's a great point. And the last, I know I said last thing, but I was watching the Cubs the other night, and Pete Crow Armstrong.
Oh, boy.
You
had to do it.
He's like
time,
a budding superstar, and they traded, the Mets traded him for, I can't even remember
that was the Javi Baez.
Oh my God, what a disaster that was, right?
Yeah, I think we might have gotten Trevor Williams.
To do it at the time, but man, he looks like he's ready to break.
PCA.
Exactly, and Chicago's loving him, and it looks like he's loving Chicago.
He is so fast, and man, he's got some power.
Yeah, he'd be something to have. Well, that's another conversation.
516-623-1240 if you want to call in. Mike Gaudone, Chris Caputo here for another 15 minutes.
So let's change over. Let's go to the hardwood. So the Knicks, should it have been that close, these games?
Mike, I think it was the opposite. I think that the the better team overall was the Pistons.
Yeah.
They were one call away from winning game five, was
yes,
that?
Yes, it was game five, yeah.
The no foul call in the corner.
Yep.
And then I can't even tell you what happened in game six. It was just ridiculous. Knicks are up 16 or 13 early. Next thing you know, they're down two at the half. Then they're up six. Then they're down 11. Then they're down seven with a minute 30 to go. And, you know, you ask Mikal Bridges what was said in the timeout. Didn't matter, you know, and he says a curse on the air when he's being interviewed by Mike Breen. Yeah. You know, we built for this. And then all of a sudden, you know, the crossover by Jalen Brunson, and he hits that three. But
even before the three, what about the play when he drove to the basket, almost fell, turns and scored? I mean, everybody in the world knew he was going to get the ball.
Yep.
And they didn't even bother setting screens for him anymore because it was just being doubled. He's a magician with the ball.
Yeah. And the Knicks had scored off a Pistons out of bounds. And, Mike, I don't know how you feel about this as a coach. When you're running out of bounds plays, let's say you go four across the baseline,
yeah.
Are you worried about having someone flash to the foul line and you lob it and throwing to them and they kind of quit on the ball and then the other team steals and gives up a layup? Some coaches don't even want to run that play.
Exactly.
And what happened is Carl Anthony Towns steals the inbounds and he goes the length of the court. Now the Knicks are back in the game. So sometimes when you're up by three or four, the last thing you want to do is turn the ball over on a live ball.
Absolutely, yeah. Those plays are too risky in my business.
Yeah, you got to find something that's going to get you a three-pointer in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, screen to screen or something like that. I know we're talking X's and O's here, but I felt like Bernie Bickerstaff, right? That's his
yes.
name? J.B.? J.B. Bickerstaff.
J.B. Bickerstaff.
Right.
Yeah, Bernie was his dad.
Yeah, was all over the refs.
Well,
Mike,
did you hear
all over.
Mike Breen's?
Yes.
So Mike Breen, he said he's – Mike Breen, this was his exact quote, and if I miss a word or two, I apologize. But Mike Breen said he's been broadcasting games for 30 years.
Yeah.
And he has never seen a coach ride the refs like J.B. Bickerstaff.
Timeouts, middle of the game.
Oh, my God.
Foul shots. He was all up in their business. And I'm not saying that Tibbs is not and that he's not doing his job there, but I think if – he was a little more concentrating on what his team needed to be doing,
yeah.
that they would have had a better chance. Bottom line, Pistons turned the ball over too much. They were the better team, but they turned the ball over too much in crunch time. As far as the next round, I just feel like the Celtics are healthy. I am hoping, though, that the Knicks can be that team of fate where they just steal game one, and then who knows after that.
Exactly. Happened today with the Pacers.
Yes.
I believe they stole game one over Cleveland. There's been so much, you know, Tibbs hate going around towards the end of the season, first round. You know, the Knicks are tired or whatever else. You know, all the things that they need a different voice. I mean, the guy, he's 250 win seasons back to back. It's kind of hard to believe why people are hating on him. I for his sake, and I like the guy. I hope they don't lay an egg in this next series at least. You know. I mean, not get swept or 4-1, terrible.
Right.
You know, just something, you know, stay healthy. Let him show what he can do, you know, again, with a healthy team. Last year, he did amazing things with that was almost a team of destiny.
Yeah. But I think people were saying if the Knicks didn't win the first round, he's gone. He rebuilt the Knicks. He got them back to where they are. Was he definitely gone? I don't know, but there probably would have been a lot of talk of that. Now, if they lose in four games, I would say there's a pretty good chance they're going to think about making a move. First three games Celtics played the Knicks this year, the Knicks led for 50 seconds.
Yeah.
50 seconds, okay? They lost all the games by double digits, and I think it was 23, 27, and 13 the first three times. Then they played an overtime thriller. This series, compared to the Pistons, is going to be totally different. That was a boxing match, Mike.
Yeah.
That was who's going to grab and what are the refs going to call? And I just felt like I didn't know what was going to happen down the stretch. Was there going to be more fouls, less fouls? The Celtics are just going to be shooting threes.
Yeah.
You know, all those games were close. 3 points, 5 points, 2 points, coming down to it. The Celtics only made 59 threes in their last series over Orlando, which I think is their fewest in any five game stretch. This is going to be different. They are going to be bombing threes on the Knicks. The Knicks are one of the worst defensive 3 point teams. So, I think that there's going to be way more threes. They're going to take, instead of them taking, 30 threes a game, they're going to be taking 45 threes a game. And if they're making 16-17,
yeah,
you know, you're looking at a four-game sweep.
Yeah, that's a great point because the Celtics are such a great three-point shooting team. And Orlando, to their credit, did a great job taking that away and daring them to play inside. Tatum was hurt, of course, sat out one of the games. But Kristaps Porzingis, former Knick, yeah, he's
doing, stretches them out.
He does. And when he's healthy, boy, what a dimension he adds to that team. Tremendous. I want to take a minute, Cap, before we finish up tonight. Just go out west to the Lakers, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. You know, I don't even want to really talk about LeBron so much, and I've never been a huge fan of him on the court. I think the whole GOAT discussion, I get it, but just the flopping and the whining and complaining. But I want to talk about J.J. Redick. So J.J. Redick, who has a lot to say, definitely, I think, likes himself a lot of J.J. Redick. Last game, he storms out of the press conference before the game. He's being asked about not subbing in the second half. Now, silly question he was asked about, talking to his assistants. Of course he does. But this guy is wound so tight. I mean, could you imagine if Danny Hurley, I mean, they looked at, I thought that they were going with a less powder keg guy in terms of J.J. Redick. It seems like how is he going to survive? Because if you're walking out of press conferences in your first playoff series, before it's even over, what's going on there?
Yeah. Put it this way. Since Phil Jackson has left, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to name you the coaches.
All right.
Mike Brown.
Okay.
Bernie Bickerstaff, 5 games. To finish it out, Mike D'Antoni, Byron Scott, Luke Walton, Frank Vogel, Darvin Ham, J.J. Redick. Who has coached the most amount of games of those?
Wow. Well, Vogel won the championship, but I don't think he was there that long.
Did win a championship.
Yeah, that's – but
– but that's my point, Mike.
Yeah.
Nobody's there long.
No.
Luke Walton coached 246 games. Nobody has coached more than 246 games. Games.
Yeah.
Since Phil Jackson has left. You know what 246 games is? Couple seasons.
Yes, it's three.
That's it.
Not even three.
2016 to 2019, he was there.
Yeah.
So how long is J.J. Redick really there? The Lakers are never happy. They won a championship with Frank Vogel gone. They won the NBA Cup with Darvin Ham in 2023, and it's gone. Okay, you're leaving. We're trying to get Danny Hurley. We're trying to get J.J. Redick. We're trying to get the next guy. I just don't think this is going to last that long for them. And my second part is, I could see the Lakers trying to possibly blow it up and say either A, we're going to try and go with some younger players from other teams and get rid of LeBron and possibly, get rid of Luka Doncic, or they might go the other way and really try to spring for it and go get Giannis for a year and give up. But they'd have to give up a lot to get him.
Yeah, I mean,
The younger guys.
Yeah, and that would really be, then you got nothing. You have to. Not that I disagree with you, but I see them staying. I think Luka is there, and they'll build around him. LeBron, listen, LeBron loves the drama, and does he want to stay there? Is he, already that it's out there, he's not going to take a significant pay cut to get help. The guy's got more. It's not for me to complain about because everyone's entitled to make the money they do. But Monon, the guy, he's going to be an owner. That's the worst kept secret.
I think things also, think about the Lakers and the Knicks. One commonality I see amongst them is at some point they tried to ride their starters.
Yes.
And the Knicks did it in the regular season. The Lakers found times to rest their guys but they went a whole half without subbing, the Lakers.
That's unbelievable.
An entire half.
If I did that in high school. there's times I've wanted to, trust me. But
You would have Section 8 up.
But could you imagine? Even in a law, five people on the court for an entire...
No foul trouble? No guys foul
in
out?
In an NBA...
And you just ride them?
Oh, my goodness.
It just... That's too much.
No, it's not.
And I just think
stubborn beyond belief.
Yeah, and I just think at some point, that's one of the things that the Knicks struggle with is, what are you going to get from your bench? McBride really hasn't given them much. Mitchell Robinson, I think people expected more, but the guy didn't really play all year.
Yeah.
He tried to just throw him out there. I'm not a campaign guy. Every once in a while he does something okay. Who really are you trusting on that Knicks bench?
Well, I don't think they trust anybody.
Right. And the problem is then you can't take Towns and you can't take Brunson off the court in this series just because of the matchups. Right. You know, with Tatum and having Porzingis, I think you have to keep those guys out there for 44 minutes out of 48 minutes, which in the long run is going to destroy this team.
Now, this is an easy question. This is literally a layup for you as a coach, but last play of the half, last game for the Knicks, three-point shot on a long pass, right? Deuce McBride is fronting. What's the first thing you're teaching people to do with their offensive player? Do you want them open towards the basket or running away from the basket?
In the NBA, they're not going over scenarios.
Holy moly, McBride, he looked like he was...
And you're 4'3", basically, letting a guy shoot right over you.
And a guy who hit mega threes in the first half, he caught it. It was basically wide open.
And I don't understand why they have these guys in.
No wonder he does not trust
them. Right before the end of the half, you should have all your big guys in.
Oh, no big on the ball. That's what, you know, I mean, again, it's easy to sit here and say what else. But personnel-wise, all right, coaches do what they want on that level. They're there for a reason. They've forgotten more basketball than I'll probably know. But if you're Deuce McBride, you're an NBA player, and you're allowing a three-point shooter to catch the ball over your shoulder, thrown from your bench, Thibodeau must have been losing whatever hair he's got left on the top of his head in halftime.
Well, at this point, you haven't cheated, so I don't think you've looked.
Okay. No, MLB standings here in front of me.
Okay. Game 7 tonight, Warriors-Rockets. The Rockets played two great games in a row to get themselves to a Game 7. Not knowing anything, what would you think?
Well,
Third quarter right now.
All right. I see the Rockets up pretty big.
Okay. Well, I think it's...
I don't want the Rockets.
No, I think in my head I was saying I think they have a pretty good chance because when it was going into Game 6, I was like, I'm going to take the Rockets to win the series because, you know, you think even betting-wise, whatever, money-wise, it's probably decent money. But you would think if they could get there, they made the Warriors put so much energy into trying that. But
exactly.
Experience is winning out. Right now, the Warriors are up 11 in the third quarter.
Wow.
So,
okay.
But one of the major weird things is a lot of the game sevens wind up going under 200 points. These are wind up being defensive battles for game sevens that teams just don't shoot the ball well and defense wins out. But I'm going to be interested. I honestly, during this year, I tried to pull myself back from the Knicks because I just hate being disappointed.
Yeah.
Trying to watch another team, trying to watch Kevin Huerter when he was on the Kings and then traded to the Bulls. But I'm pulling myself back into the Villanova Knicks. And, you know, I am trying to pull myself back into Villanova now with a new coach. But I'm going to pull myself back in and hope that they steal game one. So we'll see what happens.
Let's hope so. I mean, it's exciting. So I'm just, listen, a couple of years ago we would have been happy just to be talking Knicks playoffs and anything.
Right. Now everybody's they've won 3 years in a row. They've won the first round.
Yeah,
so let's take it another step.
Let's do it. Well, again, thanks to our lacrosse coaches from Limestone University, from Adelphi University, Brian Gray's behind the glass, as always.
We'll be back next week.
Next week, yes.
Possibly talking some Islanders.
We're going to some Islander veterans on the program. Have a great week. And once again, this has been Sports Talk New York on WGBB.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.